Okay, welcome back. This is part three of our introduction to structural analysis. Let me share the screen. Okay, so here we are, introduction to structural analysis, part three. And today we're going to talk about simplifying assumptions that are going to make this class possible. So the first assumption is going to be small displacements. The second assumption is going to be linear systems behavior. So a basic question is, what does it mean for a system to be linear? And how can you use that in analysis? And then the final topic we're going to look at is, how does symmetries help you reduce the amount of computation in analysis? So three things. Okay. So as a reminder, okay, we're interested in theory of structures. Our structures are going to be partitioned into statically determinate and indeterminate structures. So these assumptions are going to apply to both classes of problems, okay? And we're basically on this pathway where we're connecting mechanics to analysis, analysis to design. We've done that. Theory of structural analysis is going to be two classes of structures, determinate and indeterminate structures. We briefly looked at that last time. And so today, we're going to have simplifying assumptions. And so here are the two main simplifying assumptions for this class, small displacements and linear systems behavior. So let's see what small displacements means for truss and beam elements. Okay, so we assume that application of loads will cause a displacement. So the first thing is, we're not going to assume rigid body behavior. So in the case of a rod that's carrying an axial load P and has an original length L, we're going to assume that the load will stretch the length of the rod by delta L. And for small displacements, delta L will be much, much less than L. Or equivalently, delta L divided by L will be a fraction that's much, much less than 1. Okay, so that's what that would mean in the context of a rod that carries other tension or compression. And for flexure of a beam element, this picture shows the underformed configuration. So I have a beam carrying two loads that has a span B. Then I apply the loads and the beam deflects. Okay, so here we go. Here's the deformed configuration of the beam. And small displacement says, hey, the distance A is going to be approximately equal to the distance B. And for steel and concrete structures, that's not a bad assumption, okay? And for most practical situations, A is going to be greater than 99% of B. And if you see the beam deflecting, most likely you're in trouble, okay? And so that's one thing. So you don't want to be able to see the deflection. And the second thing is, if we assume small displacements, then strictly speaking, the equilibrium is with respect to the underformed configuration. If I take moments about the left-hand side, okay, this reaction force times A has to be balanced by these two forces here and their corresponding distance. And what we're gonna do in this class is we're gonna ignore A and we're just gonna use B, okay? So it's an approximation, okay? Now, not all structures, okay, have this property, and sometimes you can use tricks to basically fool people into believing that the displacements, there just are no displacements. And a classic example of this is the arch structures that are used in traditional or vintage supermarkets, Safeway supermarkets, okay? So you can Google vintage Safeway supermarkets. It's a whole style of architecture. And so this is what it typically looks like, okay? And it's actually, if you think about it, so I'm running a grocery store. What do I want? I want to have large open spaces so that I can configure, you know, the shelves in the grocery store. I certainly want my customers to feel safe. And so if there's large snow loads or anything like that, I don't want them seeing the roof moving in any direction, okay? So a good way of sort of keeping that concern at bay, instead of having a flat roof structure like this, you could put an arch, okay? And so even if the arch comes down a little bit, it still looks like it's perfectly safe, So here we go. Right, so when heavy snow loads cause large roof deflections, the arch mechanism gives an illusion of safety. Okay, so it's still, the dashed line still looks completely safe. So I've known about this trick for quite some time. And then recently I thought, I wonder if there are any safe ways that have actually collapsed due to this. And so I was originally thinking, well, you know, what parts of the country have lots of snow? Colorado, okay. So if you go online and you Google Safeway roof collapse, sure, there are some safe ways that have where the roof has collapsed. And where are they? Maryland. Gee. Okay. Of course the Colorado people know what they're doing. Okay. Now there are also plenty of counterexamples where small displacements don't apply. Let me show you a couple. One is where you have very large rotations in beam elements. So this is the right-hand picture is a picture of like a robot arm maneuver, okay? And if you look carefully at the picture, you can see that the rod is actually elastic, okay? And that it's actually bending a small amount. But it has very, very large geometric displacements, okay? Similarly, you can have problems where you have an elastic rod, you apply a bending moment at the right-hand side, and then the rod, you can just steadily increase the moment and the elastic rod will actually roll up into a complete circle, okay? So these are not small displacements under any circumstance, okay? You can also have large material displacements. So in the introductory lecture, we talked about, you know, designing earthquake structures and isolation pads to protect the superstructures, okay? And so when you look at the details of how these isolation pads are actually built, okay, often you have some sort of a large rubber pad, and in the middle of the pad you have like a lead core. And the reason that you have lead is lead has this very nice material property that it yields, and it can absorb lots of energy without losing much strength. So if you build an isolation element that's got lead, rubber, and then these steel plates in here, and then you go to the lab and do experiments, then you're going to get force displacement curves that look like this dashed line. And so you can approximate those force displacement curves in analysis by these solid curves here, okay? And you can actually track how the inelastic behavior evolves over time, okay? So clearly this is like a graduate school kind of thing, but it's not linear either, okay? Or small displacements. Okay, so the second assumption is linear systems behavior. Now you can use the property of linearity to simplify analysis by orders of magnitude, okay? So, we have courses like linear algebra and that kind of thing. And so the first basic question is, what exactly does linear mean? So if you go and you talk to a mathematician, they will talk about linear functions. They will say a function y equals f of x is said to be linear if it satisfies two properties. So the first property, if I have f of k of x, then I can take the k outside the f, okay? So f of k of x is equal to y times k times f of x. And similarly, if I have two values of x, say x1 and x2, then f of x1 plus x2 is equal to f of x1 plus f of x2. So if you have some sort of function that satisfies these two properties, then you can say that it's linear, okay? And for arbitrary constants k and m, if I know my structure is linear, then I can take k times the first function, m times the second function, and that response will be equal to f of kx1 plus mx2, okay? So the reason in engineering that this matters, okay, is because in many, many applications and structures, f is not free. If the valuation of y equals f of x has some sort of a cost. You have to do an analysis, it takes time, and so time is money, right? And so if you know that your structure is linear, then you can just do a couple of analyses and then use the linearity property to get responses of the structure for which you didn't actually do the computation. And the latter part is free. Okay? Now, so you can, linearity, you can test for linearity. Okay? So imagine, you know, you conduct an experiment to determine the extension of, say, an elastic cord as a function of applied force. So you might think, I wonder if this elastic cord is linear. So you can imagine an experimental setup where you have an undeformed length, and then you apply a load F, and then you measure an extension X1. And then I can change the force, say F2, and measure X2. Okay, so you can imagine, no. So it will take a bit of effort to set the experiment up, and the measurements could happen pretty quickly. And then from an analysis standpoint, you could think, well, okay, there's going to be some sort of a relationship between the applied force and the measured displacement. So I can take my experimental results here, and I can plot the values, X1, F1, X2, F2. And maybe the data points look like they're a straight line, right? I can fit a straight line through the data points that goes pretty close to the origin. And I would look at this and think, oh, this kind of relationship's kind of, it looks like it might be linear. So a linear, so what linearity does is it allows us to predict solutions. If I know that F1, if I know that Kx is equal to F1, so K is some sort of stiffness, X is a displacement, and F is an applied force. If I know that Kx1 is equal to F1 and Kx2 is equal to F2, and I know that my system's linear, then in fact I can compute the displacement of the system to any linear combination of F1 and F2 and get the displacement automatically. All I have to do is take X1, multiply it by M, X2, multiply it by N, and we're done. And that computation's free. So you might look at this and go, well, that's fine. You know, that's just a simple, you know, it's just a simple elastic cord. Surely this doesn't actually scale up to something that's more complicated. And in fact, you're wrong, okay? In fact, this idea scales up to the solution of matrix equations like you would have with MATLAB, okay? So in structural analysis, you're going to have matrix equations of the form AX equals B, right? So B is going to correspond to loads. A is going to correspond to the geometry, material properties, and all that stuff. And X is going to be a vector of displacements, okay? And so when I'm solving a structural analysis problem, the analysis basically boils down to the solution of this linear matrix equation here. And if the dimensions of my matrices are like n by n, x is n by 1, b is, say, a vector of n by 1, okay, then the computational work is going to be of the order n cubed. So if I double the size, okay, then the work's going to go up by a factor of 8. Right. So, but if the system is linear, okay, I can do exactly the same trick as in the experiment. I can compute the solution, the displacements due to a loading pattern B1, compute the deflections due to a loading pattern B2, and then I can estimate, okay, use the linearity property to get the displacements due to any combination, any linear combination of B1 and B2. I can say I have M times B1 and K times B2. Then I can just simply write down what the displacement pattern is going to be. And so here's a picture of a thing that looks like a bridge, cross-section of a bridge structure. And I apply a load P1 here, and then I have a load P2 here. And I have reactions. Here I have reactions. And I can compute the distribution of forces, the reactions and displacements and so forth. And if the system is linear, then I can take those computed values and compute the response of the system for any combination of B1 and B2, any linear combination. And this works for support reactions, bending moments, shear forces, displacements, rotations, and so forth. It's a very, very general idea. Okay, so that's what linearity is. And we'll use it in this class. So the second property that crops up in structures that you should be aware of is the notion of symmetries. And again, if you go and you talk to a mathematician will say, wait a minute, let's back up a bit. Okay, so symmetries provide engineers with an opportunity to reduce the model size and computational effort. So what would a mathematician say? So you may have seen this in high school, okay? So a function is even, i.e. it's symmetric, when y equals f of x is equal to f of minus x, okay? And so there are many functions that you would have seen that are symmetric. Y is equal to x squared is symmetric. Y is equal to cos of x is symmetric. And the counterpart of this is skew symmetric. So a function is odd or skew symmetric when y of g of x is equal to minus g of minus x here. So you've got f of x minus x and a minus here, okay? And again, you'll have seen many functions that have this property of being skew symmetric. Y equal to x cubed, y equal to sine x. They're both skew functions. And as a home exercise, you should verify that if I take an even function and I multiply it by an odd function, and I integrate that product from minus a to a, okay, then the result will always be zero. Always be zero, okay? And so we're going to see later in the course that if f and g of x represent bending moment diagrams, and one happens to be even and one happens to be odd, and you have an axis of symmetry, and so the symmetry shows up in a to the minus a, then you can, just in one line, you can write down up. The integral is zero. Just, you can immediately, no computational effort required at all, okay? And you do that by noting the even and odd functions, the product of even and odd functions, you know, integrated over some interval minus a to a. Okay, so that's what symmetry means. And it crops up in a number of ways. Here I have a truss structure that is geometrically symmetric, so there's an axis of symmetry along this blue dashed line. The boundary conditions are such that if I apply loads P, of course, node B is going to move over, move to the right a little bit. But basically, the shape of the structure is going to remain symmetric. And these nodes will move down a little bit. But at any point in time, this axis of symmetry will be preserved. And so what that means is that you don't actually need to analyze the whole structure. You really only need to analyze half the structure, and you can, the only part that's tricky about this is that you need to replace this blue dashed line by boundary conditions that are appropriate, okay? And so symmetry means that if there's an axial force D in this element here, the axis of symmetry will mean it's D here. C, C, A, B, B, okay? So how do we simplify things? We can cut the model in half, and then adjust the boundary conditions along the axis of symmetry. So the structure on the right-hand side here shows what the reduced structure looks like, okay? So at this point in the middle, okay, because it's symmetric, this point is just gonna move up and down the vertical line. And that's just the same as having a boundary condition where I have a node here, and that's a roller, and it can just move like this. And similarly, you have a roller here, okay? This guy can still move out, and that's it, okay? So I've taken a problem and I've reduced the size by approximately a half, and because the computational effort is order n cubed, that's reduced my amount of computation by a significant amount, okay? So that's a problem where you have one axis of symmetry. Now, you can also have problems where you have multiple axes of symmetry, and you can get even larger reductions in computational effort. So let me show you a slightly different example. So this is stress analysis of a cross-section of a long pipe. So think of something like it could be a pipe like a gas line pipe, you know, some oil pipeline, something that's very, very long. And these pipes have the property of being plane strain. They don't elongate in the axial direction. They just basically remain the same length. But there can be significant stresses due to the pressures that are inside the pipe, okay? So when you do the analysis here, okay, so here's, this is what the cross-section looks like. There's one axis of symmetry in the horizontal direction, and there's a second axis of symmetry in the vertical direction. So if I want to know what the distribution of stresses is throughout the whole cross-section of the pipe, I don't actually need to analyze the whole pipe. I can take advantage of the symmetries and just analyze one quarter of the pipe. Okay. So this is what the analysis would look like, okay? So I'm going to have stresses in the y direction. So dark blue basically means compression, which makes sense. And I can have stresses in the x direction, okay? And so these two plots show you what the distributions of stress in the x and the y directions are going to be. And all you have to do is take those results and then basically rubber stamp them to create the profiles of distribution of stress throughout the whole cross section. If you're interested in following up on this, you can find Wayne Jane's PhD. It's on the web. And also you can search for the second paper that talks about the dynamics of the flexible beams. And that's our story on small displacements and taking advantage of symmetries. So we will come back to this many times during the course.